Welcome to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. This is a recording from the monthly Oldie Literary Lunch at the National Liberal Club. To book a ticket, please go to www.theoldie.co.uk/lunches. Our last speaker is Kate Summerskill, who was literary editor for the Daily Telegraph when her huge hit, The Suspicions of Miss Witcher, came out, became a hit TV series. She's written many books since. She has judged the Booker Prize. And her latest book is about one of the world's most famous killers. It's The Peep Show, The Murders at 10 Rillington Place. Ladies and gentlemen, Kate Summerskill.
Hi. Is this working? Can you hear me? Yeah. I'm going to tell you a bit about the research that I carried out for The Peep Show and how a reader of The Oldie played a part in it. You may well know the outlines of the Rillington Place case. In March 1953, the police discovered the remains of six women in a tiny terraced house in Notting Hill, then a very deprived, dilapidated, bomb-damaged part of London. And the bodies had been, they were found, three of them walled up in the kitchen, one beneath the floorboards in the front room. The bones of two further women were found in the back garden. And the chief suspect instantly was the tenant of the ground floor flat. There's a tenant of the ground floor flat, Reg Christie, a middle-aged clerk who had always seemed the most respectable citizen in the area. It became instantly a huge, sensational news story and remained probably the most notorious crime of the decade. This was in part because this story got under everyone's skin because Christie was on the run and the papers and was asking everyone to look out for him, publishing his picture. So Christie's were spotted everywhere. And then when he was caught a week later, it emerged that he'd not only strangled his victims to death, but he had gassed and raped most of them. The other reason it was such a big case was because people got to thinking about another crime that had been committed in the exact same house 3 years earlier, a double murder of a woman and her child. Their names were Beryl and Geraldine Evans. Their bodies were found in the wash house in the back garden. And Beryl's husband, Tim, had been charged with the murders. Tim Evans confessed to killing his wife and child at one point. But at another point, including during his trial at the Old Bailey, he accused his downstairs neighbour, Reg Christie, of having killed them. Nobody believed him. He was found guilty, convicted, and hanged in 1950. But now that Christie had been exposed as a serial killer, it seemed altogether possible that Tim Evans had been telling the truth when he accused him. I researched most of this book in the National Archives at Kew, where there is an extraordinary quantity of material on both cases. There are files, the Metropolitan Police files, the Home Office files, the prison files. The Evans case was the subject of two separate government inquiries. There's hundreds of thousands of pages. I was at first intent on using the archives to recover details of the lives of those who were touched by the case. Christie's neighbours, his acquaintances, the pathologists and detectives and reporters who worked on the investigation, the families of Christie's victims and, of course, the victims themselves. They had been characterised in the press as very much of a type, but I found that their personal histories differed widely. One, for example, was a prostitute who drank heavily and slept in an underground lavatory on the Edgware Road. Another was a Jewish refugee from Nazi Germany, Nazi Austria, who longed to become a nurse. And a third was a young woman from Northern Ireland who worked in a cafe but aspired to become an artist. Yet my most exciting find in the archives was probably, well, did relate to the Evans case. It was a memo in the prison files that had been written by a prison guard on the day that Christie was sentenced to death. The guard had been waiting with Christie in the cells underneath the Old Bailey for the van to take him to Pentonville when Christie suddenly made a confession. He said he had killed the baby, Geraldine, as well as her mother, Beryl, something he had never confessed before. And then he went on to explain how it came about. At first I wondered if this was another of Christie's attention-seeking behaviours. He told a lot of different stories. But as the story settled with me, I realised that it was the one account that I'd come across that made sense of all the contradictions in Tim Evans' stories about the case, and that Christie had made this confession at the moment when he had nothing to lose. He'd been sentenced to death, his fate was sealed, and he almost casually told the guard this. And then I found in another file, a Home Office file, an exchange of letters between Sir Lionel Heald, the Attorney General, who had prosecuted the Christie case, so had just successfully got his conviction, and a senior civil servant, in which they discussed the emergence of this prison guard's memo. It had been sent to the Home Office and agreed that it should not be divulged to the public. I realised why this was such a politically sensitive issue. That very week, a bill to abolish or suspend capital punishment was being put before the House of Commons, and to have evidence that there had been a miscarriage of justice in the Evans case at this point would have given powerful ammunition to the government's enemies, those who were seeking to abolish the death penalty. So the memo was successfully suppressed and was not released to the public for another 40 years. And even then, when it was released, it was quietly in a slew of other documents, thousands of other documents that came into the public domain. Outside the archives, I found another story that had been hushed up by Sir Lionel Heald, albeit more innocently. The writer Craig Brown directed me to a piece that had appeared in The Oldie in 2004 in the brilliant series How I Met. Most of the people, the famous people who were featured in How I Met were glamorous or worthy figures, but this contributor, a woman called Judy Cameron Wilson, her story was How I Met John Christie. She had been working for the Auxiliary Territorial Service in 1940 as a van driver for the War Office. And she recounted in her piece how she had drawn up outside the War Office one very rainy day in 1940, and a policeman had knocked on the window of her van. He invited her into the blockhouse for a coffee, and she, not wanting to seem snooty, she said, agreed. So she went into the blockhouse and down a narrow passage, and then turned to see the policeman following her in with a terrible look in his eyes. He dived at her, he got her round the throat, tried to strangle and overpower her, and she summoned all her strength and kicked him hard in the groin. He staggered back. She ran for the exit, went out through the pouring rain, ran through the rain to her van, got into it and drove away fast. That evening she rang her father and told him what had happened, and he was very sympathetic, but discouraged her from reporting it to the police. He said, who would believe the word of an ATS girl against that of a policeman? After the war, Judy Cameron Wilson got married. She had three sons and was living comfortably in Surrey when she came upon the story of Christie's crimes in the newspaper. She saw the photograph of him and instantly recognised it, those eyes. She told her husband, who said nonsense, but then read the pieces about Christie and realised that he had been working as a police constable in 1940 as part of the War Reserve Force. So he got in touch with Sir Lionel Heald, who was gathering evidence for the prosecution of Christie at the time. This is mid-1953. And Lionel Heald thanked him for phoning, but said he didn't want to call his wife or interview her at all about the incident because they had plenty of evidence against Christie already, and he didn't want to put the family through it. They had three young sons, after all, and some scandal might attach to them through this association. So Judy stayed with her story for the next 50 years until she wrote into the Oldie with her report of what had happened. And I was struck by how she had been twice suppressed in telling her story, first by her father and then by Heald. I was grateful to Craig Brown for directing me to this story, to the Oldie for publishing it, and I was glad of the opportunity to be able to include it in my book about the murders. This, in some ways, incidental. Somehow her experience is very telling about the time in which she lived, the expectations and assumptions, and it is our first recorded instance of Reg Christie making an attack upon a stranger.
You have been listening to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. Why not get three trial issues of the Oldie magazine for just £1? Sure you'll enjoy it. We'll then charge you £25.75 for every six issues. Just go to checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter old trial as one word in capitals. That's checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter old trial.